We provide care to, right now, military, Afghanistan, all over the world, for PTSD and closed head injuries via a clinic we're setting up in downtown Los Angeles. It will include social workers, pharmacists, and other health providers. So telepharmacy, telemedicine, tele-whatever you want to call it, to the rural areas is something that we're also very interested in. So because we're most accessible, because we're the most qualified to manage medications, and because we've demonstrated the outcomes that we can show, we really need and want to work with you and want to be an integral part of the healthcare team as we go forward. So thank you very much, and I'd be happy to entertain any questions you might have.
Thank you, and I've made this statement several times when I've spoken public, how pharmacists are underutilized and overeducated for the services that they do. And I just wanted to have you reiterate or just reiterate the fact that I'm assuming that all pharmacy programs throughout the country are now being educated at a PharmD level. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And I'm assuming you all have national standings, national boards that you have to pass, prospective state boards that you have to be able to pass. Tell me a little bit about the educational program. Before I ask you that, is there any residency programs currently set up in any state for pharmacists whatsoever?
Absolutely. We, as a school, we run one of the largest residency and fellowship programs in the country. We don't pay for all of them. We pay for about 10 of them, but we manage 30 plus residencies and fellowships in the Los Angeles area. And there is a much huger demand of applicants for residency programs than there are slots. Every year, well over 1,000 PharmD graduates are not matched to residencies because there's not enough slots.
And what percentage of students that graduate with a PharmD degree end up going to the residency program, would you say, nationwide?
Nationwide, it's probably somewhere approaching 20-25%.
So that's becoming...
California is very different. UCSF and our program, we're more in the 50%. And as, frankly, the traditional pharmacy positions are becoming more and more difficult for students to get, there is more interest in additional training, and so we really need to expand the residency training slots. For example, to go into the safety net clinic without having a residency in at least some component in that, because it's not just doing medication therapy management, it's also cleaning up the dispensary or the pharmacy, has to do with formulary issues, and students really learn that through residency training. And of the 12, I believe 11 of the pharmacists in the safety net clinics that we're associated with are graduates of our own ambulatory care residency program and have had experience in the safety net clinic. So it's very important, and you know, the issue is just finding the funding to provide these residencies. And we actually have PGY1, which is the first year. We also have specialty PGY2, if someone wants to specialize in cardiology or neurology and work in a acute care setting where, you know, it's very specialized care. And we also have fellowships, which is more to give them research background. But residency training is very important, and we don't have nearly enough slots in this country.
Well, besides the undergrad requirements, which I'm assuming most of them are either in the science, biology, physics, chemistry, then the 4 years of postgraduate work, the residency program, During the 4 years of the pharmacy, of your PharmD program, I'm assuming, and is there patient interaction and actually hands-on clinical experience as well? And then of that, how do you, as a teaching institution and in the state of California, because I'm assuming you teach at a national standard level, all schools and colleges of pharmacy do, so how do you interact with patients if the state doesn't have, allow you statute to do that, like for taking blood pressure and drawing blood? How do you, is that just part because you're in a teaching institution and you have that ability to do that?
Well, we, there's, I think I had a slide, 2,000 of the hours are required to be in patient care settings under the supervision of a pharmacy preceptor. And so they have to have 2,000 hours of direct patient care responsibility, and that starts in the first year with the introductory pharmacy practice experiences and goes throughout the 4 years. And the fourth year is really entirely devoted to what we call advanced pharmacy practice experiences. They used to be called clerkships. And so students go for 4 or 5 week periods and work with preceptors in every kind of pharmacy setting, community, long-term care, hospital. And they have a whole menu of things that they can choose from after they've met the standard requirements. So they get, we certify them for immunization, so they do, they're able to provide immunizations in these programs. They do thousands and thousands of volunteer hours over and above the 2,000 hours in healthcare. You, I believe, visited the
I got my influenza vaccine at the one in East Los Angeles with students.
And I don't know if you noticed, but it was Congresswoman Roy Ball-Allard that was there. In one of the photos. See if you guys are awake. Yeah. Getting her blood pressure checked at one of our health fairs. So, you know, we are able to do that. I think the CLIA legislation is to be able to expand our ability to look at, you know, these fairly innocuous and, I mean, if a patient can do it at home, certainly it's, I think, acceptable to have the pharmacist do a finger stick and, you know, whether it's cholesterol or what exactly the blood test is. But so they're able to practice all these. They have to do counseling. They have to do they have to come up with medication therapy management recommendations that are supervised by the preceptor. They have to work interdisciplinarily with physicians and PAs and NPs. So they get all that kind of experience. So it's a having spoken to many pharmacists that went on to medical school, I would pose to you that our curriculum is actually more intense and more difficult than the standard medical school. Not to say that that's good or bad. It's just there's so much that people need to know about medications, and there's so many complexities and moving into the area of personalized medicine and pharmacogenomics and all of that, I don't think I could graduate today.
Well, other than the obvious problem of not having a provider status and with the limited ability to do vaccinations, I think it's just primarily just influenza. I don't know if there's a
Well, we can do some others, but part of the problem, or one of the major problems is, you know, the insurance providers.
For the reimbursement portion.
They would rather pay for a patient to have to make another doctor's visit, and then the physicians, at least in our experience, say, you know, well, we don't really, that's not a big deal for us, and so why didn't you get that at the pharmacy? Well, the reason they didn't get pharmacy is because
they didn't get reimbursed for it.
Right. Yeah. They'd have to give it away.
So. Okay. Any questions?
Just again, I want to thank the the witness, and it really, you know, just brings home the fact that we really are at the intersection between health workforce development and healthcare reform. And so I think the issues that we are talking about, access and breaking down the silos and making care more readily available is really the bottom line. I was taken by the ability of USC, of your program, to kind of collaborate with others in ways that were kind of new. Talk a little bit about the pipeline. That's a big issue, obviously, in everything. But talk about some of the programs you have at the high school, because I think there's some preliminary programs, some outreach programs, mentor programs. Dr. Kathy, right. Talk a little bit about what you're doing at SC in terms of that pipeline and how that feeds into, again, preparing young people, acquainting them with opportunities, giving them some insight, giving them, a leg up into these professions.
Well, I know there have been discussions about diversity of healthcare providers, cultural competence. And so about 4 or 5 years ago, I formed a diversity initiative and brought on African-American pharmacist graduate, Dr. Walter Cathy, who Senator Price knows. And we are launching a major effort to get to middle schools, because we find that that's really where you've got to get to these young people, as well as further on in high schools. And we started a program called the Pharmacy Explorers Program. We're now out, I believe, something like 15 high schools as well as middle schools. We're working with Cal State LA because they have a very large Hispanic population that does very well in the sciences. In fact, I've been told that half of the chemistry department at UCLA are Hispanic kids from Cal State LA. So we're working with those kind of partners to increase the diversity of our graduates. It's striking because the number of our faculty and graduates that speak Spanish is extraordinarily high. It's always kind of interesting to see a young Asian woman in the safety net clinic speaking perfect Spanish. And we did an evaluation, and amongst our faculty and students, we cover something on the order of 75 languages. And some of our students actually speak up to 8 languages, which surprised me. But that isn't the answer. The answer is I want our pharmacy student class to be representative of Los Angeles. And so one of the things that was up there is the barbershop, which is targeted toward the African-American patients with hypertension. So they tend to go to the barbershop. So we're working to teach the barbers how to use electronic blood pressure monitors, and if they get high readings, then have a network of pharmacies that they can be referred to verify that that, in fact, is a high reading and get that patient into treatment. So, we also spend a lot of time on cultural competence as part of our curriculum, so that, even if you're not from the Hispanic culture or the African-American culture or the Asian culture, you have a sensitivity to that. But we are very, very serious, and it's a long-term dedication, because we know it's going to take a long time as these young people with the education and the skill sets to qualify to get into our school come through the system. But at least our school, we're dedicated to making sure we have a diverse group of graduates, and Dr. Cathy has done a fantastic job of assisting us with that.
Thank you. And before we close, yes, I agree and understand that USC could potentially have a national football program next year, but I just want to close that UCLA has a lot more national titles in basketball.
I'll give you that.
Anyway, thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you for the invitation.
And that'll conclude this joint hearing for the Assembly Health and Assembly BMP on workforce.